Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Devoted Life Podcast. We're your hosts, Stephen and Tracy, and we're so thankful that you guys are tuning in with us again. In this episode, we're actually going to be doing part two of our testimonies, and Stephen will be giving his testimony in this episode, and we know it's going to be really powerful, and we hope it blesses you guys. This is the first time he's actually sharing his full testimony. There's some of these things people that have known us for a while don't even know. And so that's why we feel like we really feel the Lord on that. And it will really be helpful and bear witness to a lot of people, we think. As always, you guys can find us on social media at The Devoted Life Podcast on Instagram and The Devoted Life on Facebook. And if you would like to support this podcast, you can do so via PayPal, our merch store, or Patreon. And we're also, in the coming weeks, we're going to have other ways you guys could financially support this podcast if you so choose. So be on the lookout for that. And like I said, we really feel like this is going to be a powerful time with Stephen sharing his story. Usually people, there's differences in how people share their testimony. Some people share from when they were saved, but we're choosing to take it back a bit from really through Stephen's life, because I think it's that story that speaks to how mightily God can move in someone's life and heal them and deliver them from years of trauma. And only God can do that. And of course, he always gets the glory. But I think this is, that story is why it's so powerful. It's powerful anyways, but it's even more powerful because of that. So, yeah, I'll toss it on over to Stephen and he can start.
Yeah. Well, you know, the good thing about our testimonies, it's, like Tracy said, is that sometimes it can really resonate with people, you know. It could be something parallel to something that they went through in their life too, and can really, that can just speak to them in that way, because they maybe don't feel that they were alone, that they're the only one that went through those things, you know, and they have somebody they can relate to, or somebody that can relate to them as well. So that's kind of why that's why testimonies are so important.
Yeah.
So this would have been, I think, when I was a young kid, when my parents got divorced. I was around 6 years old, and this would have been in 1978, right around there, late 70s. So it was me, I was around, like I said, around six or seven, right around there. And then I had a brother that was around 2 years old, and then my sister, which would have been around 9 months when my parents got divorced. Obviously, that's a tough time for kids anyways, going through divorce, at least for me, because I know, like with my brother and sister, they were too young to really remember it. But I have memory of it. I still do have memory too of it to this day. Yeah. I think as a kid, sometimes you think, you know, it's something you did because, well, you're a kid and you just don't understand. You know, you don't understand the complexities of adult relationships. And,
right.
So they got divorced, and obviously that was a tough time for my dad. And some of my memories back in that time are kind of bits and pieces. You know, I don't remember everything about it. Like, I remember them getting divorced and my mom not being around, because my dad had custody of us. That's just the way it worked out. I think my mom did that because she knew she couldn't financially support us, and my dad could. Is the reason that it worked out like that. Mm-hmm. But my dad, obviously, it would probably, I'm guessing, maybe a year or two later, met someone else, and they were together for a while before they got married. I'm not sure. Again, it's some of the my memories is kind of cloudy in some of that. So he gets remarried and marries a woman, and I think her biggest struggle was that my dad didn't want any more kids after that. I think that's where a lot of her problems were with me personally. This is where a lot of my abuse came from. Is that I remembered my mom, my brother and sister really didn't.
Because they were too little.
because they were too little. And she
took it out on
now my stepmother at this time. Had an issue. Didn't like my mom out of
jealousy,
probably immaturity and jealousy because she was kind of young too.
He had kids with another woman, and right. You know, you hear that a lot. That's actually when common.
And he was done having kids. He had gotten a vasectomy, and he was like, three kids is enough for me.
Yeah.
You know, she was young, had no kids. Yeah. I think she wanted kids. My dad didn't want any more. I think that created problems.
So she basically took out whatever it was she had, like whether it was jealousy, frustration, resentment, I don't know, whatever. She took that out on
I think she hated it that I remembered my mom because what she did with my sister, because she convinced my sister as she was getting older.
She couldn't like brainwash you, saying, I'm your mom now.
Right. And she did that. My brother, which was the middle child, it's typical, they hear that about middle child, they kind of get ignored.
Yeah.
And that was kind of the case with her. She kind of just ignored him. He was just kind of there. Mm-hmm. Wasn't. There was instances here and there where she was a little harsh with him at times, but, I mean, he just kind of got ignored. My sister, she had her convinced that she was her mom.
Wow.
And because, you know, my sister was nine not even a year old when my parents split up, so she didn't remember my mom.
Right.
And I don't know how that all got rectified. I think my sister would have to speak on that. I think she had told me at one point how she, you know, when she finally actually realized that that's not my mom.
Right.
So she did those kinds of things. And I think her issue with me is, like you said, I remembered my mom. And she didn't like that because she couldn't do that with me.
Right.
And that stemmed from her wanting kids and my dad not wanting kids.
Right.
So that was kind of a rough part of my life as a child. And that lasted till about... Oh, was it 10? Around 10 years old, I think. 10 or 11?
Mm-hmm.
I wasn't a teenager yet, I know
years.
That. So it was about a 5-year period. So, you know, right around there, 11 or just before I was 12, but probably 11. Anyways, so.
And the abuse progressively got worse.
Oh, yeah.
And got
it did.
More violent.
And I don't. It's crazy. You know, you think when you have kids, and I'll give a few examples because I want people to understand the severity of it. I look at my own kids and that, you know, like when I had kids, little kids, and we'll get to this point too, but I just kind of want to go ahead a little bit and then we'll come back. You look at your children, and especially if you've come out of abuse, you look at such a little child and look at the age that I was when that happened. Man, I look at like our grandkids, how small they are. It's like, how would you do that?
How defenseless they are.
But how could you do that to a kid? Do the things that she did to me, you know?
A certain kind of person.
Right.
Like obviously, she had issues.
Right.
She must have had abuse.
Maybe.
She must have had traumas in her life to cause her. Because as we believers, spirit-filled believers, know what that is. That's the devil operating in someone's life through demons.
Absolutely.
Like, no person out of your flesh, I think, is capable of that. I think you have to have some sort of demon operating in your
to
life
children,
to do that. That's cruel. It's evil. So, I mean, you know, look, you know, after you have to assess that after you're saved and you have to forgive, you know, but then you look at it through a different lens. You look at it through the lens of Jesus.
Right.
And it's hard, but you can do it.
Yeah.
And you do look at it differently. You're like, well, they were hurting too. Something must have happened to her.
Hurt people hurt others.
Yes.
Yeah.
But,
I just happened to take the brunt of that.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's a few specific instances that I, you know, there was a time when I think you know about this, that we were at the beach and we were at a lake there, the local lake there. And I think I was on an inner tube or something and I went out a little too far, obviously, and I had fallen off the tube and the water really wasn't overhead. But, you know, when you're young, you're a little kid and you fall out and the water's really deep, even though it's not overhead, you kind of panic. I almost drowned.
Yeah.
I remember very vividly.
Now, this is not gonna make sense to any of our listeners at all. But I'm just asking this to Steven because I actually don't even know this, the answer to this. So I'm asking him, because we grew up in the same small town. What beach was it? Was it the one by DK's or the one that was?
I mean B&B.
yeah, B&B, or was it the one?
It was the other one.
The other one. You know what's crazy?
The dog.
You know what's crazy? That's the same beach that I almost drowned at. Yeah. Dude, weird. That's weird.
But anyway, so yeah.
Yeah.
That is kind of a weird thing, but same beach, same town.
And
same.
I went out too far. I fell asleep on the thing.
Well, that wasn't what happened to me. Yeah, but, but anyway, so I fell off, or I don't know if I fell off or got off, but the water wasn't quite over my head, but I think I panicked because I was young. And I just
well, and there
scared,
was a drop.
It scared me.
Well, and there was a drop off there that right. It went really deep. Like it was like fine, like you could walk out a long ways, and then it just dropped off. Yeah.
So yeah, I fall off, and I mean, it scared me. I don't really remember everything, but I almost drowned at that point. Or, I mean, obviously I didn't, but. Mm-hmm. But in that case, in most kids, the first thing you're going to do is you're going to console them, make sure they're okay. But that's not what happened here. Her response to that was to abuse me over that. Like, I got in a lot of trouble for doing that, for that happening. I don't know if maybe it inconvenienced her. I don't know what it was. Or maybe she was upset that she wasn't watching us.
Oh, yeah.
And took that out on me.
Yeah.
So I actually got beat for that. We're actually almost drowning, which is a weird thing to think about. You got beat for almost drowning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that already is coloring your mm-hmm. self-worth, and right. that no one cares, and there's no sense of protection or love you know, your life is pretty devoid of that. And because your dad works so much.
Right. Or my dad worked a lot, and that's just it. And I want to say that my dad worked all the time, so he wasn't aware of all this stuff. And I never told my dad this stuff because as a kid, you're afraid to tell anyone.
Yes.
And I was very withdrawn. At that point, just because of the divorce and everything, and then immediately the abuse starts happening, and I just kind of withdrew. And that, you know, that wasn't the only time. There was another time, and we'll get to that. But there was lots of instances of bloody noses, getting backhanded for some of the things that you should never even hit a child for.
Yeah.
I understand disciplining kids,
but this was.
You know, to guide them and teach them. And,
this wasn't that.
This wasn't discipline. This was violence. Yeah.
Now, I don't remember if this is right. So if it's not, you can just say, oh, no, that didn't happen. Did you say that there were also instances with punishment where she would lock you in the closet in the dark?
I don't. Possibility. Again, some of that's cloudy. Maybe I blocked some of that out, maybe, but.
For, like, really ridiculous lengths of time.
Yeah. Yeah, that may have been the case. I can't say for sure on that one, but.
Because I think when we're explaining this, and when we get to the end where, you know, obviously Jesus gets the glory in this story, I think you have to understand what that does to you. As not just a child, but then into your adult life, that really does it. And we talked about that the divorce was already a trauma for you, because that's traumatic for all kids. You hear that all the time.
Yeah.
So that's
and then I had nobody I could talk to about it.
Right.
Like, so I worked all the time.
Yes.
And I certainly couldn't talk to her about it because she hated my mom.
Right. Yes.
So I had to internalize all of that.
Well, and then she was being manipulative and also keeping you kids away from your mom. So she couldn't pick you up for her visitation. She was playing games and being very vindictive.
And
then
my dad being gone,
and right. So then you think, because you're a kid, so you don't know the ins and outs of what's going on. Right. So then you think it's you. There's something wrong with you. Yeah. You feel abandoned. You don't feel loved. You don't feel worthy or worth anything. I don't know. And so I think when we speak of when you have repeated trauma after trauma after trauma, that actually creates a psychosis in you. And it does. And then, you know, as we know, that's how the enemy comes in and operates in our life. And it's not fair. And I know you hear that a lot. People are like, how could that be? That's not fair. Well, the word fair does not exist in the devil's vocabulary.
No.
He does not care.
He's an opportunist.
Yes. Yeah. So it's through things that were not your fault, but through trauma and abuse, that was that doorway that was open that he got that access point. And then, and these different kinds of, I think the different kinds of abuse and punishments also play into that psychosis, right? Because that is so, so traumatizing. Not just the violence, but like the locking in the closet in the dark, because the kids are scared of the dark, you know?
I mean, you know, you got that, you know, it's just,
it's cruel and inhumane, right, really.
Right. Yeah. So yeah, going forward there. So that's, and then one of the other big events that happened is we lived out in the country outside of the town. I mean, you know, you mm-hmm. live in the same town, so.
Yeah.
But we lived out in the country, and I would ride the bus home. My dad worked on a farm, and sometimes I would ride the bus out to the farm, and then I would be there with him for a while and then come home with him, you know, ride home with him. I would just, because it was in the same town or something. But anyways, sometimes I would ride the bus home. Whether it was miscommunication, I thought I was supposed to ride the bus out to the farm, and, you know, and I did that, and then my dad wasn't there, because I don't know if he had to leave early for something, or maybe have the day off. I don't remember.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it was a long time ago. So,
yeah.
So I ended up staying, hanging around there, and that was my family of ours, relatives of ours that owned that property on that farm. That was a dairy farm.
Yeah,
still there actually to this day. But, so I stayed there, and for I don't know whatever reason they didn't know where I was, didn't know that I'd rode the bus there. I assume they were probably maybe looking for me, but it seemed weird that they wouldn't.
Check the place you always went every day.
Right.
School.
Right. So.
Yeah. That's weird.
You know, and they had kids too, and they had an older, a teenage son, and I ended up getting hurt while I was there. Fell off he was kind of hanging me off the back of this farm truck, you know, kind of goofing around, trying to,
you know. Because you were really tiny.
Trying to scare me. And he did that with some of the other kids too, but he had lost his grip.
And you fell.
And those farm trucks, they're quite considerably high off the ground.
Yeah.
It was a flatbed farm
truck. And
you
fell on a
concrete floor.
Right on your head.
Because it was in a shop, and I ran it on my head.
Yeah.
And I don't even remember hitting the floor, because, I mean, it probably knocked me out.
Yes.
So I had a massive concussion from that. For whatever reason, I don't know if I ended up ever getting taken to the doctor for that. I don't think I did. I don't remember ever going to the doctor, but there was a couple days span I don't really remember. But I do remember waking up after I hit the ground. Obviously, I'm crying, you know, because it hurts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm sure I was bleeding and whatever. But the family got me to the house and laid me down and put ice packs on my head, whatever. I don't know. And I don't know, I think they were trying to get a hold of my parents. Maybe they were home. They were looking for me. Maybe so nobody was home. So we didn't have cell phones back then.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
But anyways. So my stepmom ends up coming picking me up at some time, but it was later in the evening. I remember like it being dark. So
yeah.
I don't know what time it was, but it was dark
right.
at the time. Because
you don't know what season it was.
Yeah,
it was
I don't
like
know if it was
earlier.
Spring,
yeah.
fall, or winter
right,
or something.
Right, right.
It wasn't winter, but anyways.
Yeah.
So she knows that this happened to me.
Yeah.
But instead of being concerned, like most
people. Why aren't people taking you to the hospital? That's what I want
to
know.
I don't know why I didn't go to the hospital. I should have been in the hospital because, like I said, there was.
That's like. That's
after
severe.
This point, after, so I get in trouble for getting hurt, and it wasn't my fault.
Right, someone did that to you. Yeah,
I think maybe it was part of. I rode the bus there, and I wasn't supposed to, but I think no. Anyways, doesn't matter in the condition that I was in.
You shouldn't have.
But
that's the last thing. You
what
know.
Happened is I had this concussion,
and you were
in my head,
in a, lot of
a
pain.
Horrible pain, you know, and then she proceeds to slap the crap out of me. Upside my head, you know.
Oh my god!
I remember that too. Mm. I do remember that, and I remember crying because it hurt so bad. But I still remember that. Like I have a vivid memory of that moment.
And you're almost 50 now, and you still remember that.
Yeah.
That's crazy to me.
Yeah. So, but then for the next 2 days, I don't have any memories. At least I probably because of that concussion that I had. I probably should have been taken to the hospital. I don't think I ever was.
Well, and you to this day have a. You have an indentation in your forehead.
Well, I'm sure I looked horrible. I'm sure I had massive bruising.
Have,
I'm sure I looked terrible.
You still have. So you know that was considerable. Didn't one time when you hurt your head at work, when you cut your head on the truck at work and you had to go get stitches, remember when they did an X-ray and he asked you something?
I think he asked me that I've had
did
had
you ever,
head injury.
Yeah, he asked you that because they could see the scar tissue in that area
mm-hmm.
that was something significant
traumatic trauma to my part of my head.
Yeah, He asked you, actually yeah. asked you that. Yeah. I remember that.
I might have had a fracture or something. I don't know. Yeah. But anyways, I obviously made it through all that. But yeah. It's just one of those instances, like, you look at a child, it's like, how can you do that?
Right.
You know, it's just, it's mind-boggling to me how the mindset people have to be to abuse a child. I don't get that. I mean, I know broken people abuse, hurt other people. I get that, but still.
Well, you got, I don't know.
Talking about a defenseless child that isn't going to be able to defend themselves against an adult.
Yeah. You know?
Yeah. But anyways, so.
Let's fast forward a little bit. To when you're about, like, 10, 11.
Getting close to the end of their marriage. Again, dealing with lots of abuse. I've got too many instances to even explain them all, but those are the reason I brought those two up, because those are the most significant ones I still have a vivid memory of. But it was pretty bad for me. I got to the point where at my age that I was having thoughts and stuff about her.
Mm-hmm. Violence.
That I shouldn't have been having at that age.
No.
And this, well, because was, and this was a young, you know, I was probably, you know, 8, 9 years old when I was thinking and stuff.
You were thinking violent thoughts toward her.
Yeah. Well, the thing was, I was so, it was almost probably out of desperation that I wanted her gone.
Yeah.
Either I wanted her gone or I didn't want to be there no more. Like, and I mean in a bad way. You know,
so you had suicidal
thoughts. Right, at 8, 9 years old, I was having thoughts of wanting to die, you know. Because I really didn't feel any love from anybody. I know my dad worked a lot, and maybe he just didn't realize what was going on. I don't know. And I never said anything. Mm-hmm. I know I didn't. And I was very withdrawn, and I'm surprised nobody picked up on that. But anyways, so they ended up getting, we had moved about an hour away from there, and my dad was driving truck long haul, so he would be gone during the week, and this is getting close to the end of their marriage, so mm-hmm. He was driving long haul, so he'd be gone during the week and maybe sometimes home on the weekends.
Mm-hmm.
And while he was gone, she would have this guy over, so she was messing around. And I ended up, you know, I told my dad. And of course, I got repercussions for that, like you wouldn't believe, because she knew I'm the one that said something.
Right.
I mean, who else would have said anything? The other kids were still, I mean, they were older now, but I was still the one.
But you know what? I think, I don't know, you were just like, you're at the end of your whatever, at the time you didn't care.
Right. I was like, I got used to the abuse, so I expected it. So I was like, you know, what do I have to lose?
Right.
Because
you know your dad's not going to stay with someone that's doing that.
No, and they stayed together a very short period, mm-hmm. and then she was gone.
Yeah.
You know, that obviously didn't work out. Mm-hmm. And so my dad ended up moving on the other side of the state, which was, I think, was just to get away from everything. Moved with my grandma.
With your grandma. So your dad needed to heal. He had 2 back-to-back divorces, you know, really.
Yeah.
I mean, not back-to-back, but because it had been, you know, 5 years or whatever, But that's, I mean, I don't know. You got to heal from that. And then, you know.
Well, then he's got kids, and he's single dad again.
And, you know.
You know, and he, you know, I know he had his own things he was dealing with, too. And, but, you know, so moving forward, we moved over the west side of the state with where my grandma lived. Mm-hmm. And she had a lot of property. And it was been my dad's mom. So, so that was kind of a.
And she had a lot of land, like forest and creeks.
Yeah,
and
so it was kind of a...
You could just go and go crazy.
It was a very happy time,
yeah.
That period, because I got away from that, and she was finally out of our life.
Well, and you felt probably freedom and peace for the first time. Like, peace probably was just, like, so foreign to you.
Yeah, it was like being locked in prison, and finally somebody opened the door and let you out. You know, you just didn't know what to do with it.
Yeah.
So I got to be a kid, and I didn't have to worry about anything anymore for a while. So, and we lived over there for a
couple of years.
Huh? Yeah, I think it was a year, at least year and a half, 2 years. Yeah. I think it was kind of for my dad to kind of recuperate from all that and kind of just get things together, you know, and kind of just be away from all that. And we ended up moving back over, and I think I was probably close to a teenager then, about 13 years old, when we finally came back over here, over to the back to where we were from, and so my dad was didn't remarry for quite a while. Mm-hmm. So it was just, you know, dad and us kids, and, you know, dad would work. Dad's always worked. And he always worked quite a bit. He was just who he was, you know. Mm-hmm. So I had to help take care of my brother and sister because they were still too young. Right. You know, I was 13. So I would help, you know, watch the kids, you know, watch my brother and sister while dad was.
So you had to be responsible.
Right, I had to be, also had to be responsible at a young age. And then I'm also getting to that, you know, that age of hormones and mm-hmm. all that stuff. And I'm mm-hmm. starting to have anger problems and stuff that came out of nowhere and that I wasn't ready for. Well, I kind of suppressed it for a while because of that
feeling. Well, I don't think at the time you knew that it was from
your trauma and abuse that you endured. Well, you know, that time with my grandma's house, I didn't have any of that because
it was a release for you.
It was kind of a release. I didn't have to worry about anything. I didn't have any responsibilities. I just got to be a kid, you know.
Yeah.
Because my grandma just kind of took care of everything and watched us. My dad worked while we were over there too.
Right.
We went to school there and everything. But so now we moved back over, and you know, we're not at my grandma's house anymore. I'm watching my brother and sister, and you know, dad's always home in the evenings, you know, for, you know, makes dinner and everything and that kind of stuff. But during the day,
From school.
I mean, we still go to school and everything, but I have to watch the kids after school and, you know, make sure they're doing what they're supposed to be doing and taking care, helping get that, clean the house, whether dishes need to be done. We had chores, we had a garden, we still had chores we had to do, and I just had to make sure that all got done.
Yeah.
And then, you know, here come the emotional issues I started having, and again, I suppressed that stuff and hid it because I don't know. I never told my dad anything through the abuse, so I just never told him that stuff either. I think I just kind of kept it to myself. Mm-hmm. You know, in the few conversations with my mom, then she would call us because she didn't live there anymore.
Right, she had moved.
She had moved away. I mean, she only lived an hour and a half, two hours away. But she would come and see us occasionally when we
had breaks and stuff.
Right, spring break, summer, we would go to her house for quite a while during the summer. So I would talk to her about some of that stuff, but even then I was very reserved with it. I think I just got in such a habit. It was almost like a defense mechanism. I just didn't talk about it.
Right.
A weird way I internalized it. But
yeah.
But then my dad finally actually ended up meeting someone else. Actually a really good woman. She was a really nice lady. And they ended up getting married.
You were almost 16.
And then by that point, I was, I was starting to drive. I think when we first, when they were together, like when they first, she started living with us, I think I had my learner's permit. I didn't actually have my driver's license yet. Because I remember her taking me driving. Because dad would be working or something, and she would kind of do that. We need to go to the store, so she would let me drive. And so I could get time driving. But, or whatever other errands, she would have me just drive her.
Yeah.
So I would get that driving time in. But anyways, she was a good woman, and she was, again, that was another kind of relief again, because then I didn't have to take care of my brothers and keep an eye on them really much anymore. I mean, they were starting to get a little older now, too. And
well, she was really, because I think your dad was so used to having you do stuff and mm-hmm. be in charge of things and handle this and handle that. Having her there.
Well, she had to kind of tell my dad.
Like, yeah, she was an advocate for you. She's like, I can do that. He doesn't need to do that. Like, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Right. Let him be a kid, you know, give him a break.
So she was really an advocate for you to be able to have
a
teenager.
I mean, she's not with us anymore. She passed
a few years ago.
So. Yeah. But I always have that respect for her and what she did for us. Mm-hmm. And, and that was the last woman my dad was married to before he lost his battle of cancer. And we'll get to that point. But she was a good woman, and things were really good for a long time.
And they got married when you were, like, what, 16,
right? Yeah, by the time they actually got married, I actually had my driver's license. So or pretty close. Because I remember actually driving to their wedding by myself. I think I had a girlfriend at the time. And so we drove to the wedding. So, yeah, I did have my driver's license by the time they got married. So... it was also nice to see my dad was actually happy. With somebody that actually cared about him, and she was a godly woman. And
she came from a very Christian family.
And she grew up in Montana, a very Christian family.
Yeah.
So that was good for my dad. I think for the first time he had somebody that was a good person. She wasn't.
Yeah.
She was a trustworthy person. She loved him. She cared. She loved us kids like her own. I mean, she treated us just like we were her own kids. She always did. And she had kids, but
well,
I mean,
that was a rough time where she, with what they happened with her anyway, and where, so but, really she was around you guys more because of the strain on her own stuff. But so she really was,
right.
You were her kids.
Right.
Really, you know?
Yeah. So she treated us like our own kids was, which, you know, which was great for us. And we still had, you know, our mom was still in the picture, but my mom ended up moving away
to another state.
Pennsylvania, which was all the way on the other side of the U.S. at the time.
Yeah.
When I was still in school, obviously, because I was still living at home. So, and I, you know, so I was probably 16, 17. I don't know if it wasn't my senior year yet. I don't think.
No.
I think it was my junior year. She ended up actually moving away. So, anyway, so.
So then you really, only time you really guys got to see her was in the summer break.
Yeah, really? I mean, there was but you know, once she moved away, it was more like a lot of phone,
yeah.
You know, while we were in school and everything, because the cost of flying us over there and everything was
a lot,
right?
Yeah.
So yeah, so you know, obviously having and then you know, going back to you know these emotional problems I was dealing with you know you're still you know you're a young teen you're a teenager you know I'm 16 years old now 16 17.
So you start getting into dating and
your
serious relationship. And
well, to some degree, I mean, I guess you look back, it out really wasn't serious, but at the time you thought it was, but.
Yeah.
And I kind of really, I don't know, I didn't have probably the, I can't say it was all bad, you know, but I had not very good relationships because of, I don't know, if I just didn't know how to. Because I didn't have a good female figure in my life growing up. Mm-hmm. And it's not a slight toward it, like my mom. I think she just wasn't there. You know, wasn't there because she had her own life.
Right.
And I had, you know, the abuse and everything that I dealt with.
So that just colored.
Abuse from a woman.
Yes. So that just colored.
Right.
I don't know. I think it colored your view of women. And then
I kind of did, yeah.
And then
that's what it really
so
was.
So I think you probably had a trust issue.
I had a huge trust issue with women, yeah.
And then. And then you already have, you're having self-worth issues.
Yeah.
And you have
anger problems.
Anger issues.
Which I hid.
And so then you got to think, if you don't receive love, how can you give love?
Right. And that's where I think that's what I struggle with. I think my view of love that I did have was kind of
askewed. Like really.
Yeah. And dysfunctional, askew, whatever you want to use. But
yeah.
So yeah, I had really weird relationships with the girlfriends that I did have. I probably put up with more than I probably would have if I hadn't. Because you just want
something.
It's like some kind of love is better than nothing, you know? I don't know. Even though it probably, I mean, you know, when you're young, you call it love, but it's just like, it's that whole, what they call puppy love or whatever it is.
Well, because I think for you, though, because sometimes, you know, when you talk about a teenage boy, it's like, ooh, girls, girls, girls.
Right.
Like their hormones are going crazy. And it's about the physical, you know, sex or whatever. With you, like, because we went to the same high school and stuff, and it was really a small town. So seeing you and getting the impression of who you were, you never came off cross like that, like a guy that was trying to just hook up with girls or something.
No, I never liked that.
And, like, you always seemed like you had respect, and you had manners and stuff. But, and also because you were quiet.
Well, a lot of the respect thing, like, treating people well, even in all my years of dealing with anger issues and mistrust of people, and I never hurt. I was never hurtful or
and
like
you were never
violent.
Ugly to
I was never violent toward people.
And you didn't treat people badly.
Right.
Either.
I had anger issues, but it was never directed.
You weren't rude to people
right.
or anything like that.
Right. I never like some people. You know, they have anger issues. They lash out and they hurt people. I never did those things.
You just internalized everything.
Right.
And that's where you know you.
I was destructive in other ways.
Right. Where you would just not really care about yourself.
Right, I didn't care about myself. I would hurt myself doing things that, like, I didn't care. I didn't care if I got hurt or not.
Yeah.
And
then having, you know.
And then not even understanding why I was doing that thing. And then suffering, dealing with massive amounts of depression in my teen years. Like,
suicide.
17, you know, 16, 17. Yeah. Those were tough times for me.
Yeah.
Even well into up to almost 20. Mm-hmm. That was a really dark period for me as a young, for being really young, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But then, you know, the girlfriend I had at the time ended up having two kids together. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you know that. But,
yeah.
You know, my oldest son.
And then the middle.
And then which is the middle child now.
And he's disabled.
But, and obviously, we didn't last. We never got married. And we split up. You know, just dysfunctional. Mm-hmm. And she was kind of a broken person, too. She'd come from some.
Her mom, like, left her and abandoned her, like, legit.
And she dealt with trauma, too, in a similar fashion that I did.
And abuse, and, yeah.
So, I mean, again, mm-hmm. two broken people.
Yeah.
It was a recipe for disaster, you know.
Yeah, two broken people can barely make one whole person.
Right.
You know,
but we ended up having two kids together. As irresponsible as that probably was, but we did, and she ended up getting, I got custody of my disabled son, and she got custody of my oldest. So,
and then you ended up getting married years later.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I ended up marrying someone.
Yeah.
It was about probably a couple of years later.
Yeah.
I'm thinking it was probably at least a couple of years.
And then you had your youngest son.
Then I had a kid with her, mm-hmm. and we were only married, what, I think three years.
3 years. Yeah.
And that didn't last because of infidelity on her part.
Yeah.
Was not helpful for me because I already had this massive mistrust of people. And I think that's a lot of my problem is I had a really hard time trusting anyone.
Yeah. Well, and you had, I think you're...
Especially women.
Even though
they didn't have to necessarily do anything, but I had just like this immediate mistrust of women to begin with.
And the majority of your examples of women are not good ones.
Right.
So that already, you have a weird view of women. I think you have a very like skewed, twisted, tainted version of women and what women there are good women out there.
Right. Well, both
which you saw in your dad, you know, in your dad's last wife.
Right.
And yeah, then you got to see.
I just had more bad examples than your mom. I think that kind of outweighed that.
Right.
So, but the damage was already done at that point.
Well, yeah, you already got that trauma, you know, and stuff. Right. And the wounds are already there.
Yeah.
The damage is there with what you're having to try to navigate through.
Right.
And I think there's something to be said is when we're navigating through that without faith and without God in your life, when you're just like literally out there by yourself and no one's telling. Now, you did go to church growing up through your grandma.
Right. You know, I did go to church as a young kid. Like, I'm talking like young, like. It would have been after my dad left the wife that was abusing.
Yes,
it was after, I think, when we first moved back,
mm-hmm.
we went and lived with my grandma for a while, and then we moved back. And then we stayed with my great-grandma.
Oh, yeah.
Who had lived in the same town. So we stayed with her, and she was a godly woman.
Yeah.
And she was in her 80s at the time.
Yeah.
That would have been my great-grandmother. Beautiful woman, too. Very strict, loved kids, though. She was very protective of us, to the point of, like...
She crapped... the stories about your great-grandma crack me up, because you got to think that she's this old woman, this 80-some-year-old woman, and she is such a firecracker with how fiercely protective she was of you great-grandkids. Because she witnessed her hit you one time. She slipped up and she hit you in front of grandma.
Yeah, one time.
Great grandma,
We were visiting because we didn't live there at the time. And we were visiting my great grandma.
Mm-hmm.
And my stepmom, which the one that was abusing me, I'd brought homework with me to do while we were on vacation because I had homework I had to do or something.
Mm-hmm.
And I hadn't done it yet. And she hit me with that book, hit me over the head with it. And my grandma lost it.
Yeah.
She basically told her if she ever did that again, that she was going to. And I don't even want to use the language she used because she was going to do something with that book if she ever saw her lay a hand on me again.
Yeah.
And she wasn't having it.
So
And I kind of like, and you know, like in the back of my head, I got this big smile. Yeah. It was like finally somebody told her what she needed to hear.
Well, you felt someone's protecting you. Yeah. Someone's sticking up for you. You know, so you did have glimpses.
Right. So fast forwarding back to when we moved in with my great grandma just for a little while because we didn't have our own place since we had just moved back into town, and we didn't live there too long. I think we lived there maybe 4 or 5 months or something. Yeah. Then dad found a place there, so that was good. And then obviously
so you were in church,
right? So that's the time I was actually in church as a kid, and so the example I had in church was, you know, I know we're going back here a little bit, but you know, back to around when I was preteen, you know, 12 years old. Mm-hmm. I grew up, you know, went to an Assembly of God. It was a local church there, a very small town. Obviously, everybody knew everybody.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's one of those churches that if somebody wasn't in church, everybody, the whole town knew about you didn't go to church that Sunday.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Oh, so guess who wasn't at church today?
Yep,
you know?
And they're talking about it too, because they have that spirit of religion.
Yeah, they're talking about
they're
it.
They're gossiping and they're talking about stuff.
Well, the whole town knows you didn't go to church that Sunday.
Yeah. And they know all your business too.
Right. As a you know, big farming community. And so anything you did, everybody knew about it. But but it was very much although there were some good people there, obviously, because that's not fair to paint everybody that has a spirit of religion. But there were some very spirit of religion type stuff that went on there, you know, the gossiping and you're the little old ladies in the corner, the little clicky groups talking about the pastor's wife and
look what she wore today.
and you know, that kind of stuff. And can you believe that? Yeah,
oh,
right.
Geez.
So that kind of stuff I grew up around and very judgy type Christians and so, you know, it just wasn't a lot of good examples. There were some good people, obviously. Not everybody was like that, but there was a lot of bad examples, and
the majority,
it's just one of those things. I had, and even in that, I had a lot more bad examples than I had
good
ones.
Right. Like you're going to hell,
and that colored my opinion. Oh, if you don't do this, you're
going
to go to hell.
And you get tattoos, you're going to hell.
Right.
Yeah.
But
all that stuff. No one ever told you about the love of Jesus.
Right. Yeah, I never heard about that stuff.
They just told you you're going to hell if you did this or looked like that.
Right.
Or,
So I saw a lot of judgment from people, and that's.
And that colored, you know, your idea of that too.
Right. So, you know, fast forwarding back to when, you know, I have kids and have been married and then, you know, get divorced, of course.
So then
it was weird because church wasn't and God wasn't on my mind even in all that. But what I didn't realize is that our son's disabled, God gave him to me. And that was something, at the time, you don't really, I didn't think about it, and I didn't see it that way, but I could look back now and say, God saved my life with him.
Yeah, he did.
Because he knew, he put him in my life at the right time. Because
he knew where you were at.
Even though it was a long time before I came to God, but that kept me safe until I was ready to give my life to God.
Because for the first time, because of what you had gone through, for the first time in your life, you had to think beyond that, not just about yourself, because he was so fragile,
right?
And he needed you, and he needed somee to take care of him and be an advocate for him and protect him, and so you, it's almost like I think I guess
in a sense selfishness of always worrying about thinking about myself, like what I was going through, and I had to kind of refocus on someone that truly did need me.
Even beyond if you just have kids and, it's a little baby and they're so helpless. And
I mean.
That's too. But this was different because he was going to need you.
Right. Well, yeah. And I had two other boys. So I have three
You'd
boys.
You'd already gone through that.
So I absolutely love all my kids. Yeah. But there was something different. Exceptional about my disabled son, which obviously is the middle child.
Yeah.
But I look at him even today, and we'll get to this when we get toward the end, that, like I said, he saved my life. And I even look at him today and look at him that way. Even now that I am saved, that every day that how thankful I am that he's in my life, even now, just because if I look at all we've been through together and how little he was when I had him, you know.
He's literally a miracle because of the prognosis that the doctors gave him when he was born. He wasn't supposed to live. They said, he'll never talk, he'll never walk, he'll never think for himself, he'll never do
basically be a vegetable.
Basically. But he and he's things. None of those things.
He's blind.
Yes.
He's blind. He can't see. And he has other health issues. But overall, he's a pretty healthy child.
Yeah, he is.
Healthy. I say child, but he's like 28 now.
Yeah.
But anyways, so going back. So then obviously we met. Because I was, I had my divorce. You know, I went through that divorce.
Because you became single. Because we were kids. This is how we, well, obviously we knew each other because we went to school together. But, and we lived in the same area. But our kids went to the same in-home daycare.
Yeah. So that's how we ended up meeting.
Yeah. And she was a good friend of mine.
Right.
And you became single. And then, I don't know, about 6 months later, I became single. Which we didn't even know that
yeah,
about each other.
I was working and, you know, trying to just barely get by and taking my kids. I had to take my kids to daycare because...
And daycares, even back then,
we were already using her as daycare before I got divorced from my wife at the time.
Yeah.
I don't know how we found her, but we did. And so our kids were just...
And she was like, she was not even, wasn't charging the max amount that daycare
was. Oh, no. It was still cheaper than anywhere else. Yes. But at the time, you know, minimum wage wasn't much. And I was making above minimum wage, but, you know, single guy, you know, I got divorced, so I'm on one income because my wife at the time worked.
Yeah.
So we had two incomes, now I'm at half that income.
Same bills.
Yeah. Because she just bailed and left me with everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm juggling the two boys that I have with me because she didn't take our son that we had together. She just left.
Well, then I think that just opens up those old traumas and wounds for you.
Yeah, mistrust again.
Yep. And that
so,
you don't
see,
feel...
I was right not trusting people.
Right, well...
See what happened?
Right, well, and then you don't feel like you're worthy. Your self-worth is in the toilet. You know?
Well, in my mindset at the time after that divorce is like, I was absolutely not looking for anyone.
But God.
Because I had that mindset, I was like, okay, I can't do this anymore. No. I just can't. I can't deal with that anymore.
You know
I honestly felt the time I was like, oh, if I have to be single as my own, that's what it'll be.
Well, and you know what's so crazy is I wasn't either.
Right.
Because I had infidelity and trauma and abuse and
mistrust.
And so I, you know, it was like you have to go through like the stages of almost like grief where you grieve the loss of this relationship. But then you're also processing the trauma.
Yeah.
It's weird. It is, I have to say, this is probably one of the most bizarre things to navigate.
Yeah.
Because, again, when you're doing this without Christ in your life, you literally are grieving and like literally feeling like your heart is ripped out of your chest.
Yeah.
But on the other hand, because you don't have Christ helping guide you, you literally hate that person so much.
Right.
You just see.
I was extremely bitter,
but you have this wound, right? That you hurt. And I think that's where you're like, I hate them so much because of how much they hurt me.
Right.
And because you don't feel like you deserved that because you didn't do anything.
Right.
Not saying we're perfect.
Right.
You know, we all have our flaws and whatever. But you're like, what did I do to deserve that?
Yeah, I really didn't do anything.
Right.
I wasn't unfaithful. I worked my job, came home and took my kids.
And we had
property. I mean, I took care of we had a garden. I water the yard, mow the yard, do the things that I needed to do.
And you had two dogs
so I was busy. It was, it wasn't like I was up running around. And even in all that, all the trauma and stuff I went through, I never got into drugs. I never was a drinker.
No.
I just never did that stuff. It never appealed to me. And I think the alcohol thing was probably because I grew up around some of the family, our family was alcoholics, and I saw that as like, I didn't want anything to do with it.
Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't either. I didn't.
Yeah.
I got into drinking later in my life, but.
So we met.
Yeah, because we were like at like about 6 months between you became single and then I became single.
Right.
And, you know, my friend that was the in-home daycare lady was like, you guys should go on a date.
Right.
She's like, you like guys are perfect for each other.
Yeah.
She's like, you guys have the same schedule. You have the same things that are important in your life. You have the same, like, I don't know, principles about what's, you know, what you're like, we're at the same level in life, like what we were looking for and what was important to us. And, but I think you're just like, I don't know, because you're like, you don't feel like you're there yet, you know, because it only been,
unsure, you
know? Like mine had been just really recent.
So
like,
when we ended up going, so we ended up going on a date and,
a few months later.
Yeah. So it ended up working out. Yeah. We got married and, you know, and I think it was what was a year after we got married. So that wasn't even the end of. You know, we had a rough patch in our, even in our marriage, you know, from the beginning, just not because of us, but things that happened.
Like
a year into our marriage, what, you lost your mom.
A year, because we had our, we got married Valentine's Day of 1999, and my mom passed away in April 12th of 2000.
So a little over a year later, you lost your mom.
And then the next year, you lost your dad.
And my dad lost his battle with cancer.
And then in between all that, you lost your uncle, you lost your grandpa, and then you lost your cousin.
Yeah.
So that was like in the next, not one that I lost my dad. So in the next 9 years, I mean, I know
a lot of death.
I mean, more than compacted into,
right.
I mean, it was pretty.
So intense. Yeah, it was tough. I mean, but that, the loss of my father, because he was the one, consistent thing. Like my entire life was my dad,
and he cared about family so much.
Well, he did, and he always, even through all the hard times, you know, that I dealt with being abused and stuff. My dad, honestly, my dad's events, he never knew about any of that stuff. I'm not saying maybe he didn't hear about it at some point, maybe from somebody else, maybe, but I never told him that stuff. So he lost his battle with cancer. He found out he had had cancer, and 3 months later, he was gone.
Yeah, so that was. Crazy. That was
so it was fast. It was really fast. He went from completely fine to 3 months later he was gone. It was just like, and that was the beginning of that downward spiral into my talk about angry.
Mm-hmm. Well, and then with my mom was sudden. We didn't have any warning. She just
She died in her sleep. Yeah. And my dad was sudden. I mean,
mom was only 60, and your dad was 40.
Dad was 48. Which is ironically, I'm older than my dad is. I'm 50 now, so I'm older than my dad, which is a weird thing to think about. But anyways, I lose my dad, and that was a bad point. I mean, most people wouldn't have seen it because I still went. You know, obviously I took off work obviously for that, and we dealt with his funeral and all that stuff. And but inside was a different.
But, you know,
inside was a different person.
But what do they say? Like, life doesn't stop just because you lose someone. Nope, you still have the same bills, the same responsibilities. Yeah. You don't have time to
the
stop.
The people that you owe your rent to don't care.
Honestly, and I'm just telling you, that's how cruel the world is, especially when you deal with people that aren't really believers, or they aren't at all. Literally, there is no compassion from people.
So anyway, dad passed away. That's a huge downward spiral for me. That's like that. That was like almost like what put the nail in the coffin for me was losing my dad, because that was the one consistency in my entire life that was always, dad was never abusive. He was always he was always good to us.
Yeah.
He was strict and he expected certain things and, but he was the constant.
Yes.
And now I'm angry because I think God took him from me.
Yeah. Because we don't understand about free will and man and our decisions.
So that was my mindset.
Yeah.
It's like, how could you do that to me? After all I've been through.
Same thing with me.
My life's getting good, and then I lose my dad.
Yep, same thing with my mom.
You deal with that. I internalized a lot of that stuff. I had to work. We had a family to take care of, and we still forged on. And you know, over time, it was rough, and over time, and we had our struggles too, but we made it through all that, and. Obviously, I internalized a lot of that anger and never dealt with it. You would definitely see it occasionally through me being impatient.
Well, and I think that was, even though we know that there were other times in our life where we experienced, you know, as kids, the abuse and traumas and repeated traumas in our life, it was like, so that was already in there. right? That had colored some of our decision making and how we were dysfunctional people and unhealthy and broken already. But then we come and we're like, you feel like you're getting fixed, you know, or a little more mended, right? When we get married and it's, but we still have issues. We're still broken.
Right.
And then the deaths come back to back. Yeah, and it's so early on in our marriage. You're like, that is so the devil.
Oh, yeah.
Even though he didn't, I mean, but it's just because we have free will and it's our actions that cause consequences to our health or whatever,
right?
You know, and what we decide to do or not do or whatever. But it's interesting, but you're like, wow, he was just on a mission to you know, keep it. Just keep that.
Yeah, I look at it, you know, the devil was trying to take me out a long time ago.
Yeah, me too.
Throughout my whole life, and he never succeeded and he failed because where we're at now. But so, yeah, again, dad passed away. That was when my life got really dark.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying physically. You look at me physically, you wouldn't have known any different.
No, because you were so functional. You still went to work. And
it's kind of like you hear like functional alcoholics. They go to work. Oh, they're alcoholics, but they never miss work. And
right. You just don't know. It's hidden.
I was still functional, but I hid it.
Yeah.
You know, mentally I was.
Because I know for me personally, and this is true for you, I never stepped foot in a church again after my mom died until I got saved.
Yeah, I didn't either.
I was like, I'm good.
I was extremely angry. And that was the dark point and where I really got, it got worse for me as far as talking about, I couldn't have been further from God than at that point.
Yeah. I remember just yelling at God.
And for a long period of time, it was like
many,
many, many years of darkness.
Yep.
Now, again, on the outside, if somebody just looked at the outside, you wouldn't have known it.
Nope.
Because there was really no sense. Yeah. Oh, they got a sweet little family. You know, saying we weren't, but inside I was about as broken as you could be.
Yeah.
I was as far from God as anybody probably could be at that point.
Yeah.
And I got into some really dark stuff. You know,
the music
I listened to very
blasphemous, very satanic,
very anti-Christian,
very, and then.
And I know it was anger that fueled that.
Oh yeah, because it's almost like you could relate to it.
Yeah, it was weird. I was so rebellious at that point.
Rebellious,
out of anger. It was anger. I was mad.
Yeah. And then, you know, you really got into, you know, dabbling in like Satanism and Luciferianism, and you got books, a lot of books on, that were very antichrist.
Well, I look at it now, like, I was like, talk about cringe. You look about, you, like,
it
you
is
did
cringe.
That stiff. You look at it, you're like, man, that's cringe. It's like so cringy.
And now. I was in, you know, I was going, like, I was in a very gothic phase then. So I was kind of dabbling in that too.
We were kind of in that same.
Yep. And then I think we kind of got out of that because you said you started seeing some hypocrisies in
that. Well, yeah. Now, fast forward to when we're, 15 years later.
Yeah.
15. And I don't know. It's hard to exact time. But, you know, I started seeing, and this is, you know, fast forward at least, at minimum 10 years probably. Because I was in a dark place for a long time.
Yeah.
It was probably a 10-year
period.
Probably a 10-year period.
Yeah, for sure. 10, 12 years.
I started seeing the hypocrisy in that too, and started seeing the, and I started questioning it just as much as I questioned Christianity.
Right.
And how I questioned the reality of, God was real, and I started doing the same thing with the other side.
Well, and you were asking some very valid points and pointing out some things that just didn't line up, and you're like, well, how can you say that God doesn't exist
but
you believe in Satan, and just how dumb that is.
Anybody that knows me, like, I guess you can just ask my wife, I'm a very logical person when it comes to stuff. Like, my mind's very analytical, and I'm very logical. Mm-hmm. And I'll look at some, I was like, okay, this all makes sense.
Right.
It's like, you say you believe in Satan, or you say you worship Satan, or you do this, or these people that I met online, obviously, through the early days of social media and MySpace and all that, if you even by rumors what that was.
Yeah.
And I would ask those questions like, okay, well, if you believe in Satan and all this, you have to believe in God.
Right. And then they would give the craziest roundabout
answer. It was like the random,
answer.
weirdest answers to it. It's like,
didn't even make sense.
And then I would go,
it was like loony.
But then I would go look at the, I think I actually went and looked at the Bible. I was like, well, Satan's, his origins are from
from.
From the Holy Bible. I mean, from that. Satan's not mentioned anywhere else.
No other literature mentions
him. And so I would go back and I'd question. I was like, no, you're wrong.
Yeah.
And so I started questioning that, of course. Then I got out of that stuff. Because
you're like, this is stupid.
I said, this is dumb.
Yeah.
I said, because this is just as fake as Christian.
Well, and you know what was really interesting?
I said, you guys just hate.
Well,
it's like you hate just for the sake of hating.
Well, and then but then you also started noticing there's a common theme to the people that were involved with that.
Well, yeah, I started to see the
a lot of their stories were
I saw a lot of parallels with who they were with how I was.
Yeah.
They were broken people. Yeah. All came from trauma of some source.
Or religion was used to manipulate them.
Well, I knew this one woman, this girl.
Yeah, her and her husband were involved.
Right, and I kind of formed some of a relationship with them. I talked to them more than anybody else.
Yeah.
And they were nice people. Yeah, it wasn't that they weren't nice. But her mother, because I was always curious, like, okay, how did you get to this?
Right.
Like, how did you get to where we're at, where I'm at right now? Like, I was always interested in where they came from.
Yeah.
And so she told me about it, and she said her mom would use the Bible and scripture to manipulate her, to tell her she didn't, like, threaten her with the Bible, essentially. Then there was scripture.
To weaponize the Bible.
Right.
Instead of show her the love of Jesus.
So that's witchcraft.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
Using the Bible as a weapon to manipulate your kids is not, that's not biblical.
That's not,
anyways.
No.
And so.
Yeah.
So she was essentially hurt in the same way. I mean.
Yeah.
From somebody that misused Christianity.
Yeah.
Didn't show her the love of God. Instead used it as a weapon. And so that's why. She came out, and I think she had been abused too, sexually abused as a young girl.
And I think that it's because you feel powerless,
right?
And you just want to have power.
So that was a common denominator amongst those people, was some sort of trauma or abuse.
It's true.
Yeah, it was. It's really sad because
it's so sad.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of where the not every church, but I think the modern church has fallen short in helping people like that, because we look at them as like, saying as devil worshippers, and we judge them and point fingers, but
we have to be ready to receive those people.
My point is, those are still God's creation.
They are. He created them just like He did you.
Right. That's a
human life.
Right.
And He loves them just as much as He loves you.
Right. They're broken, and they weren't born. You know where they're at in their life at that point. They're not weren't born.
You just have to look.
They were created. They weren't born like that.
Right. And you have to look, and you just know, like, God's trying to get to them just as much as, you know, anybody else.
Well, and I think
we have to know that. Right. We have to really understand that. And I believe also that's why it's so powerful, when God will take people that have, like, your story and my story and do a work in us and raise us up so we can relate to those people and say, I was there.
Well, yeah, and that's why God will use people like that have come out of that stuff, because you're the best person to talk to people that are still in it.
Yeah.
You know, you can read them and say, okay, this is where I was at, and this is what I believe. And you can understand why they think the way they do.
You're not going to judge them, because that's where you, that was you.
Say, I'm not going to, first thing I tell them is, I'm not going to judge you, because I was there too.
Say,
and I know,
exactly, I was you.
And I know, and I was you at one point. Yeah. I know exactly how you feel.
Yeah.
You know, the trauma might be a little bit different, but it's trauma.
It's still trauma.
Right. So, yeah, obviously I started questioning that stuff.
Yeah.
But then we got into, like, the Norse paganism stuff, because I got away from the Satanism stuff, because I just...
Yep. And so that was for a while. And then I would just say, I would have just rested on that I was agnostic.
Yeah, you gotta, but then you gotta...
And I got into New Age and all that crap.
So, yeah, so I got to deal with Norse paganism to some degree, and I read a lot about that stuff. And
like, you were, like, in it, in that, man.
Right.
You were, like, about that life.
And I don't know, there was a certain, you know, point... I think that I just one day had an epiphany about all that stuff, and I found myself, obviously, as social media developed and you had Facebook and that kind of stuff, leaning more, and even through all that trauma, I always remained somewhat conservative. I was conservative in my views on things, I think,
because
I came from a very conservative family, and I was always pro-life, even as a dabbling in Satanism and Norse paganism and all that stuff, I was always pro-life. When a lot of those people were not.
No.
I was always pro-life, even though I didn't announce that to people.
No.
I was always very much pro-life, and obviously give my mom props on that, because my mom is what, my mom definitely had an impact on that.
Yeah.
Because she worked at a place called Birthright, which I don't think exists anymore.
No, it
doesn't. But so, you know, this was back in the late 70s, 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Birthright was a
Christian,
right, like pro-life organization.
Yeah.
Basically the opposite of what Planned Parenthood is.
Right. Where the young girls could come
and they would help them.
They would help them, like,
give them things they need.
Counseling.
Right, counseling,
or,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But anyway, so I gotta give my mom props on that one. That's, she definitely got me to understand that from a young age, that the importance of life. And
yeah.
Even though I didn't really care about my own at the time,
because
of the stuff I was doing. But so fast forward back to when I found myself starting to like defend Christian conservative values to some degree, or siding with that, because I saw a change in the world.
Yeah.
I saw this hatred toward Christian conservatives.
Yeah. And you're like, what's that? I was like,
I thought it was odd that you could criticize every other religion. I mean, you couldn't criticize other religions. Like, if you criticized, I'm not going to name them. If you criticize them, you would be labeled a bigot and all these other names. But
racist.
you could openly make jokes about Christianity, and everybody thought it was funny, and no one cared.
Yep.
I was like, there's something, and I said, there's something in that.
Mm-hmm.
I said, why is the world railing
so
hard
against
that?
Christians, yeah.
And I still knew enough about the Bible to knew what the devil, the kind of things that the devil did.
Right.
Although I wasn't as versed as I am now, obviously.
Right.
And so I started seeing the hypocrisy in anything but Christian conservative stuff. And I started to find myself defending that stuff. And I think that was the started to see that change.
Mm-hmm.
And then you ended up giving your life to God and getting saved. And
and that was in the spring of 2000. And I actually just...
2000 when?
Well, my encounter had to have been in like March.
It was a couple years ago.
Yeah.
Now.
So March of 2000. Yeah. Not 2000, excuse me. March of 2020. And then it took me about 2 months to go through the other stuff like that God was like leading me in. And that I finally went to church, my first church service, where God led me to in June of 2020.
Yeah.
And then the next month they were doing baptisms.
And I went to...
And you went to support me. Because I would ask you to go, and you just weren't there yet. But I knew that once you came, that when you would come to support me for the baptism in July, I knew that you would... that something would happen to you, like that you would encounter the Lord, the presence of God, and that you wouldn't stop going to church. And that's exactly what happened. I think that was almost like, I think the Holy Spirit telling me that and giving me that feeling.
Right.
I knew that that's how it was going to go, and
and
it did. And I know we say that we both experience what's considered a silent deliverance, and it's when the Holy Spirit fills us, and then things just leave because it can't stay, because it knows like you're just there, you're all in, you're surrendered.
Oh yeah. So I came to support you at your baptism and never stopped going after that.
And then they had baptisms, the next ones were in September.
It was like a couple months later.
So a couple months later, and then you got baptized. And you said that you had, when you walked in to the church, you said you felt, you're like, whoa, just like me. What was this?
I had my I think my mindset when I went there was like, you know, what do I have to lose? I mean, it's not going to hurt me, you know, even if it doesn't, if I don't like it, then, you know, I don't like it. But so I felt like, I was at age of my life. I was like, you know, it deserves a chance. Because I looked at all the other stuff and I just saw the, I saw through the deception and how, what it would actually was. And I truly believe that was probably God. God took me to that stuff and let me see those things for a reason.
Yeah.
So I could actually see it for what it was.
Right. Well, and I think he also is going to have you use that to reach people too.
Yeah.
To say, hey, I was in that. I know what that's about.
Right.
You know.
Yeah.
So when you got baptized, I remember it was pretty powerful. And I know my sister in Christ, that her and her husband at the church, they were our pastors.
Yeah.
She said that when you actually, I don't know. Did you go under the water or they just, you did? Cause it was a really small tub and you're a big guy.
Yeah.
And, so that was funny. It was like big guy in a little tub.
Yeah.
It was pretty funny. And then when you came up and she said, cause she could see in the spirit, you know? And she said she saw the glory of God fall on you.
Yeah.
In that moment, she could see it.
So yeah, it's a weird, you know, life journey is interesting. You know, you look, I sit here now, and say 2 years now, and I look back at life and look back at all the stuff that I went through, and it's weird, you know. You look at where you're at now, and you're like, I never thought we'd be here.
Yeah.
But that's the, you know, power of
the transformative power of God,
right,
too.
Because people that knew me probably back then would not recognize me now.
Yeah.
Not mentally, anyways. Obviously, I'm physically, I look the same, but other than I'm just older now. But it just said it totally changes who you are. I mean, I don't have anger. I don't have depression. I don't have any of those things. It's and I wish I could get people to see that.
You
see,
don't have to.
People that are in the world and they struggle with things, and
you don't have to do
like
that.
You don't have to trust
carry
me.
That.
Believe me, trust me.
You don't have to.
You don't have to live a life like that. Live in that bondage. There's freedom,
yes.
And here's the answer. God's the answer to your
yes.
freedom.
Yes.
Now in that, there's effort that's required.
Yeah.
You can't just sit on your couch and God's just going to take care of everything for you.
Well, I think you have to come to a place of, well, repentance and surrender. It's
right.
Really, you have to say, it's not working and I don't know.
And
but,
that's, well,
you know.
And that's kind of what I've said. I was like, I got to that point in my life, I was like, and I had that epiphany where we spoke at church, the church we were at before we moved here.
Mm-hmm.
Where I talked about what kept me out of church for so long.
Pride.
It was...
And unforgiveness.
It was pride and unforgiveness
yeah.
that kept me away from God.
Yeah. You were blaming man for... Or blaming God for what man did.
Right, and what we do when you people... You know, you hear the term church hurt a lot.
Yeah.
Well, what you do when you're church hurt... And I understand that's a real thing.
It is.
That happens.
Yeah.
But what you do is in that... When you're in that church hurt mindset... Is that you're idolizing the mistakes of man,
mm-hmm.
and you're blaming God for it.
Yeah.
You're taking out on God. What? So you're idolizing man's
yeah.
mistakes is what
right,
you're doing.
Right.
And that's your justification and reason for not letting God in your life.
Because right. God didn't do that.
But think about
people
that.
People have free will.
Sometimes
yeah.
I just don't think people think
no,
about it like
don't.
That. And that's what I did.
God didn't do it.
And I know that because I did it.
Yep.
I did it for a long time. Even though God's hand was on my life from, I can look back at many instances where God's hand was.
Well, I think we both of us went through that after you're saved, how God will show you. It's almost like he'll take you on a journey of remembering your life.
Right.
And then you'll, all of a sudden, he just highlights so many times, and you're like, oh, there he was. There, like, you literally see it all.
Yeah.
In like a map, almost. You're like,
yeah.
Whoa, this is where he was all those times. And then he also reveals where the devil was too.
Yeah.
You really start
right.
getting
yeah.
a clear understanding of
yeah.
that operating
yeah.
in your life and what was trying to, you know, happen.
Yeah.
But I know you said when you actually went through baptism that you'd already started feeling things, you know, kind of fall off of
yeah.
you. But you said actually in the actual act of baptism, you said literally it's just like something just actually lifted off of you.
Well, yeah, you know.
Moment.
Well, yeah, you felt there was, because when you come out of like that darkness and that anger, I mean, isn't you carry that around for? I carry that around for a long time. It's not something that just
yeah.
without. I mean, God's the only one that's gonna.
Well, because I think when you're finally fully surrendered and you're giving your life to Christ, right?
Well, what happened is, you know, I just felt a weight was gone.
Yeah. Well, because
it's almost like. Your whole life, you're carrying around this
yeah.
this big weight on your shoulders, and
yeah.
it's almost like you become friends with it in some way. It's weird
yeah.
because it's just become like it's a part of you, and just, oh,
yeah.
this is just who I am, and
mm-hmm.
this is just my life. And
well,
but then once once you, you know, I like let that light in my life, mm-hmm. and you know, all that dark, you know, darkness goes away when there's light there.
Yeah.
And that, yeah. that heaviness went away. I was like,
you didn't know, but you're like, whoa, like,
you imagine life could ever be that way. And I, you know, I don't know how many times I can say that to people. It's like, and you don't have to carry that around.
No.
You don't have
well,
to.
Well, what's
that
the
around.
Bible say? He tells us that the Lord's yoke is easy and his burden is light.
Yeah.
So I think that's what it is in that moment, the Lord took that off of you and replaced
right.
that with his yoke, your yoke to him.
Right. Yeah.
So it's easy. It's not heavy. The burden's light. It's not this oppressive, I feel pushed down.
Well, yeah. And you know, you look at like what Jesus did on the cross, he took on all that,
yeah.
all that weight.
All that.
Of sin and
death and
all that stuff,
yeah.
so we don't have to.
The emotional stuff.
So why do we carry it around?
Yeah.
We don't have to.
That's what he died for.
Right.
He died so we don't have to do that.
Right. So, you know, if you're a Christian and you carry that stuff around, you need to go to the altar.
Yeah.
And you need to get that dealt with because there's no reason for that.
Get freedom.
Yeah, and get some freedom in that mm-hmm. because it's. The freedom is there. You just have to want it. You have to
surrender.
You have to get rid of that pride.
Yep, lay it down.
You know, it's a humbling thing to
yeah.
lay that down. At the
well, I think you have to repent of pride and say, Lord, I.
Well,
repent,
I like what know. I like what Billy Graham said. This was he was very much a kind of
yeah.
a, somewhat of a
young
man.
Pastor.
He talked about that. He said, it's a humbling thing to come to the foot of the cross.
Yeah.
He said, but he said, yeah, and having humility, he said, but. Basically, if you don't, pride keeps more people out of away from God and out of heaven than any other thing, because
mm-hmm.
pride is pretty much the base of almost every sin.
It's true. Well, you took a deep dive into pride. Well, we did an episode
yeah.
on that.
Yeah.
And you took a deep dive, and we've really analyzed.
And I've even got more revelation
since
then. So we might have to do a part 2 on the pride thing.
That it's literally at the root of so many things. It's
almost,
like pride,
every
yeah.
sin. If you go, I challenge
it's
everybody
crazy.
Go look up how many times pride is mentioned in the Bible. And tell me that's not important.
Yep. Well, look what was the first sin?
Pride. Adam and Eve, before the earth was anything.
Yep. That's what cast
the first
Lucifer
sin
out of heaven.
Was pride. Yeah.
Was pride. Yep.
But,
so you got to think that's how serious it is.
That's how serious pride is.
Right.
And the point is that that's what kept me.
Yeah.
48 years in bondage.
Yeah.
Because of trauma and things that had happened to me, and I had carried that around and.
Right.
And finally got freedom.
And you know how we say that God has a perfect plan
mm-hmm.
and his timing is perfect.
Yeah.
And even though we don't understand it at the time, but you do see glimpses of like, you're like, oh, okay, that makes sense now. So tell people what the significance is of what age you were when you got saved and then when your dad
yeah.
passed away. And
well, you know,
asked you.
Going back to when, before my dad had passed, he had talked to me and my brother and my sister. And when he was still coherent enough to talk and asked us to give our lives to God. And so we didn't think, you know, I don't know how my brother and sister felt about it, but you know, speaking from my own standpoint, I don't think I put too much thought into it. Because I was still, you know, I think even at that point, I didn't think we were going to lose Dad at that point. I didn't think I had that in my head that my dad was going
to pass away.
Pass away, you know.
Yeah,
so he asked us that, and
it was really important to him too, because
right.
he had done that
right
at the last, you know, few
yeah.
months of
and
life.
I don't think even in my dad's life, I don't think he did see that he didn't believe in God. He just
didn't.
It was just he believed in God, but that was about where it ended, I think.
Yeah.
But at the end of his life, he did give his life to God, and I'm thankful for that. So at the time, he had asked us to do the same, and again, I didn't think too much of it, and then, of course, we lost him, and then that was definitely the back burner after that, because
mm-hmm.
I got wrapped up in the anger.
Yeah.
But that was always there.
Yeah.
So fast forward, I turned 48, so my dad died at 48. He gave his life to Christ at 48.
Well, you got saved. He died in September, and you got saved in September about the same time.
Yeah.
He passed away. You got saved.
And I turned
that many,
and
years
I was
later.
48 that same year.
Yeah.
So we were both the same. We got saved at the same age.
Yeah.
even though he had passed, but
yeah.
So we both got saved at 48.
Yeah.
So that's a.
And every time we tell people that, they're like, "Wow,
yeah.
Like that's significant."
I mean, it took
you
me.
Know? Yeah.
He died when I was in my late 20s. You know, what, 20 years almost
mm-hmm.
before I
came to
did what my dad asked me to do.
Yeah. Yep.
I did it. But.
And so it's cool though. You think that there it was even in September, and it was almost
yeah, it was even
like,
the same month. Yeah.
Yeah, and around the same time that it would
mm-hmm.
have been the anniversary of your dad. It's I love how God does that. I love how God takes something,
a tragedy,
and he brings he.
Now
he
I have
brings,
now I have good memories of
yes.
that. Even though my dad's not here.
Yeah. He brings some
right.
He redeems that.
Yeah.
You know.
Now I have something good to remember about. Like he yeah. took the. The darkness out of it.
Yeah, he does. Yeah. And then it has meaning.
He shines light on, right.
And now it has a meaning because it is significant.
Yeah.
He did that for a reason. It was
yeah.
supposed to be around that date. It was supposed to be when you were the same age because he wanted to almost like replace that.
He replaced the hurt with.
Joy.
Right.
It was a rejoicing and
right.
it was a like.
Because I had somewhat healed from losing my dad. Obviously,
yeah.
I thought about him occasionally. And, you know, I still, obviously, well, you always miss. But I had, you know, I was at a better place in my life as far as his death.
Yeah.
But that, just that right there, having that as a memory now, it replaced any bad that was, that little bit that was left,
yeah.
you know.
And that was meant.
So now when, you know, the anniversary comes around of dad being gone or his
it's
birthday,
also the
it's,
anniversary.
I think, but I'm happy.
Right.
You're sad they're not here to some
yeah.
degree. I mean,
mm-hmm.
you always miss them again. You always miss those people, but I have a different outlook on it now.
Well, you know what I actually think, and I don't know if this is true for you, and I know we'll wrap up here, but that once you're saved and you start having a deeper understanding about things functioning in your life and with, you know, how the enemy comes in through things that are not sometimes our fault or our choice, and how that's just operating, right? What's the devil do? He comes to steal, kill, and destroy. So that's
right.
what he's doing. He's, the whole time he's trying to steal, kill, and destroy all areas of your life for you because he doesn't want you to get to where God is calling you and what he has for you because his purpose for your life, he still has it. It's still a true truth,
right.
you know? And what I got to actually do, the kind of, I guess you would say, when it shifts your perspective and you see things through the eyes of Jesus is I actually look at my parents differently
mm-hmm.
than I did before I was saved.
Right.
I actually look at them not as through the eyes of their daughter, but as through the eyes of Jesus's daughter.
Mm-hmm.
And I look at them and I see, I know that they were broken
right.
too.
Yeah, you understand that a little better now.
They did the best that they could
right.
with what they had because they were broken people.
Right, yep.
And that the biggest thing that I just wish, you know, that they could be here so either I could help them.
Right.
Or they could see this in me. And I don't know.
Right.
That's sometimes I think about that. I'm like, oh wow, that would be,
right.
that you could actually repay your parents in that way
right.
and help them because God did something in you.
Right.
You could help.
Right.
Heal them and, well, we're not the healer, but you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Through God working through us.
Right.
But you know, obviously, we know God has, you know, His plan is. The way it is for a reason and we also know that we have to go through those things because if we didn't
right
then
absolutely
I mean it's all part of the story right?
Right
it's part of the testimony it's part of
yeah.
what is going to glorify God
right
to the largest degree
right
you know is through all of the darkness
right
all of the pain you know and what he healed and delivered you from
right
It's more impactful, I think.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then more people can relate because there's a lot of variables
right.
in things that had happened
yeah.
that you're like, even if someone didn't have all those things happen to them, a lot of people could
relate to abuse. A lot of people could relate to loss.
Right.
A lot, you know what I mean?
Well, you know, the thing about, you know, once you're saved, and at least, and I'm speaking for myself, I don't really have a worry in the world anymore. Mm-hmm. I really don't. I mean, yeah, there's daily steps like, oh, I got to do this, I got to do that. But it's not like I don't have any of that stuff that I carried around before. You know, is it being a...
We don't have worry and anxiety and, like, these, like, the troubles, the day-to-day troubles. Right. Or even the world's troubles are not our troubles.
No.
Now, do we still have to navigate this world? Yes. But it's different when you have the Lord in your life and He is your guide and your anchor. And then obviously, you know, when we're in constant communion with Him and we're seeking Him daily and we are having a relationship with Him and Holy Spirit's able to flow in our life and through what we do. And, you know, we're constantly seeking Him, I think is the key. Then He helps you. He's our help. I mean, Holy Spirit is our helper on the earth. He's our counselor.
Right.
He's, you know, he checks so many boxes of what He does for us.
Right.
He's our leader, our teacher, our, you know, he's a gift from God for us. Right. Like he's the only, apart from Him, we can do nothing. He's the only reason we're able to do this walk, because we cannot do it on our own strength at all. Yeah. There's no way. You could endure it or sustain or do that. He gives us, it's beyond our ability, really.
Yeah.
And I just think that, knowing that and really, really understanding that, just, I don't know, you get that peace of mind. Well, they said that peace that surpasses all understanding. And then it helps you, gives you some clarity too about what you're going through, what you're walking through, you know. You know, our faith journey is never about certainty, but we have clarity through.
Well, even that, you know, even that, you know, if you're a believer now and you struggle with things, I definitely highly recommend that you go read, it's a very short verse, but it's Romans 8:31. And I read that quite a bit. It's like when you feel like whether it's spiritual warfare of any kind or you're struggling with something, and and basically what it says, and this isn't the whole verse, it's part of it, but it says, if God is for us, who can be against us?
Right. To really root yourself in that identity.
Root yourself in that idea that no one can be against you because God is for you. Yep. None of that stuff, none of that worldly stuff matters.
Well, because He's already won.
It does not matter.
He already has the victory.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. So you're on the winning side already.
God is for you. And no one can be against you.
Right. We know the end of the story. He gets the victory. He wins. He overcomes.
Yeah.
And He still sits on the throne.
Well, and I think that we need to come from a victory mindset.
And not a victim.
Right.
And it's hard when you're coming out of stuff.
Right.
And you're healing. Because inner healing is really important. Process.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It definitely is.
You know. I think people need to also understand it's not a one and done. It's like, oh, you get some prayer or whatever and you're good. No, it's a process.
Sometimes it's a process. It's a
because you gotta think,
a series of prayers.
If you have 40 some years of stuff.
Right. Yeah, and you know, if you're out there and you have a similar story and you know, you've come out of, you gotta remember, you got, I'll just use myself as an example, 48 years of stuff that's piled on. That isn't necessarily, that ain't going to go away in one prayer.
Now, does God take some of that supernaturally in process?
Yeah.
Yes, He does.
I mean, God can do anything.
Yes, He can. But more often than not, it's a process that we have to navigate through.
Well, it requires a little bit of effort on our part, too. Yes. It's not, you can't just sit there with your hands folded.
Well, you can't be passive about it. You have to be active.
Right.
Active in what you're doing. Active in pursuing God. Active in being in the world.
Active in your own healing. Yeah.
Yes, active doing these things
that are
recipes for your healing, which is the word, prayer.
Yeah. And we can get into that more in another episode. But,
but
that's what God did for me. That's what God took me out of, and took me out of that, 48 years of darkness. it's mind-blowing to look back at that and look at all that I went through and where I'm at now. It's the transformative power of God is just, it's mind-blowing, and I can't say that enough. I never thought that would be where I am and be healthy in a mentally healthy the way where I'm at right now.
Right.
Yep. But it's all God.
Yep, it is.
God did all that for me.
But God, he had the plan, and he was going to make sure that it went forth. You know, he said, this is the plan. This is who I've called you to be. This is who you are. This is the plan I have for your life. And Stephen had a pretty powerful dream a while ago now, where he actually saw himself talking to God. Like he was observing himself talking to God and asking God, why did I have to go through all these things?
Yeah.
Why did I go through all these hard things in my life? And why did I have to endure all that? And also, why did you wait so long why was it so late in my life that I became saved? You know.
Yeah, I think I asked. I think I was asking. Yeah. Why did I get saved so late in life? You know, I could have done so much more. Not that I can't do more now, but you think about.
There was two parts you said to that dream. The first was you asked him why you went through all that hard stuff. Why did I have to endure all this?
Yeah.
And what he said is, what did he say to you? That basically the reason for that is he needed you to be strong.
Strong for a reason. And it's,
strong for a reason.
And even to this, I don't know exactly. Strong for what, I don't know.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's something that he needs me for at some point. So,
And then the part two was that you asked, why so late in life? And I could have done so much more if I was younger.
All right.
And then you really felt him say, don't worry.
Yeah, he said not to worry, that I would
do
as much in my lifetime, which, you know, however much time I have left on Earth,
right,
than most people
Did their whole life. Yeah.
And I think that really comes down to just being obedient. And obedience is huge. I mean, I know the world has a weird view of the term obedience. Their idea of obedience is you're a slave. Right. When really the world is a slave too. They're just a slave to something else.
Right. And I don't say slave. I say we're servants. We're willing servants.
Well, no, my point was is that the world's idea of obedience is slavery.
Well, right.
But from a kingdom mindset, obedience is just
you're honored
right,
to serve right. the king.
You're honoring the Father through your obedience.
Because what he do for us.
Right.
You give him your life because he gave us his.
And yeah, considering what he'd done for me, that's a small price to pay to just
follow him.
Follow him, yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways. So,
yep. But yeah, so we hope this blessed you guys, and we thank you again for those of you that continually tune in and support this podcast. And as always, please let us know how we can be praying for you, because we will love to do that. So you can either email us at thedevotedlifepodcast@gmail.com, or you can reach out via, comment or message on any of our social media, and just let us know how we can do that for you. And we would be so happy to do that. But we don't really know we're coming in that next episode. So I guess it'll be a surprise. Well, and we'll pray about it.
We'll pray into it, and then it'll just be a surprise what our next topic is. So maybe we'll post something midweek
about it.
If we get something, feel something before then, we'll kind of let everybody know
what it'll be about. Yeah.
Yeah, what to tune in.
So, but we love you guys, and we thank you, and have a blessed week, and we will see you in our next one. Bye.
Bye.